If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
TheRightStuff.biz.
All right. Welcome. Sven is out today. He is doing something family-oriented. So it's just Alex and I for the show today. So hope you will enjoy this wonderful content we have for you. We have a few things. We got a lot of Pride Month content. A lot of other content. We have our wonderful guest here in the corner, for those of you watching on video. Special guest.
Oh, he's back.
He's here cool. To talk to us about psychedelics and why you should open your mind with ayahuasca and other things. But very quickly, before we get too started on all of this, I have a very, very, very quick update from the front lines in Ukraine. This will only take a second. Very quick update here.
Hello everyone, this is Defense Politics Asia. Who is winning right now? Russia is winning right now. And thank you for watching, and I'll see you in the next update.
Okay, there we go. That out of the way, we can now...
I thought it was going to be Gunther.
No, we can now get directly into the content.
Like Gunther versus the Asian, that would be great.
Well, Gunther seems less... I mean, Gunther wants Ukraine to win, but he's very focused on... Kosovo. In fact, Gunther hasn't had an update in about 10 or 11 days, ever since that little fracas at the border with Serbia and Kosovo happened. Gunther has not, he's been silent. And he was very angry over that because the United States actually chastised, for the first time ever, chastised our mini client state in Kosovo, saying, stop provoking the Serbs because it's dumb and we don't need this problem right now. And Gunther was outraged by that. But I've already covered that like 2 weeks ago when that happened. So now today we have Stryker actually wrote a very interesting article on the Trump indictment and the actual reasons behind it. Because Trump was indicted yesterday on the documents thing, right? The secret documents at Mar-a-Lago, which a lot of people are writing off as simply some kind of partisan shit. And it is that. There's no question. However... it's actually interesting when you look at what kind of documents Trump had. And it turns out that the type of documents Trump had and was stashing were secret Pentagon war plans and security information about Iran. So this is actually relevant material. This wasn't simply just stupid documents. And it seems that he was either holding them in reserve to give to the Israelis or to bargain, this is Stryker's theory, to either just outright give to the Israelis or to bargain with the Israelis for support in his presidential campaign. And instead, since the Jews are sick of Trump, they just ratted him out because I'm sure they get the same information from any number of sources. I mean, is it even illegal to give classified information to Israel? I don't know.
I just assume that we're in that state of affairs where you just prosecute whoever is not in power. Just an occupational hazard to be a politician now. You're going to go to jail when you lose.
It's occupational hazard. Well, yes, except I don't think that there will be any. Now, I said this is going to be one-sided. Like, I don't think that when Joe Biden is not in power, he faces any risk of prosecution from the Republicans. I think being a Republican and not towing a very fine line is a big risk in the system, which is why most Republicans will do it.
Aren't they going after Boris Johnson right now? Is that not a thing that's happening in the UK?
Yeah, he's a conservative. And they're going after him on very sort of superficial grounds. I'd have to look into it. My understanding is I thought they were going after him for hosting like parties where people didn't wear masks or something during COVID or something like that. Like they were partying at number 10.
That's even gayer than I could have ever imagined.
Yeah, that's like way gayer. It's actually cooler for Trump to be stealing like documents pertaining to like war and international conflict. That's like much more intriguing.
But what about Clinton and that fucking like server she had in her bathroom? And why is this shit always in the bathroom?
Like, yeah, that never went anywhere though. I mean, they were complaining that Trump made hay of that. And now, you know what I haven't seen? Now that you've reminded us, I have not seen any sour grapes from Hillary Clinton fans. Now, maybe I'm just not looking hard enough because I don't look at this stuff. Suggesting that, hey, Donald Trump attacked Hillary Clinton endlessly about her server.
Yeah,
and now
yeah,
he's leaking documents.
Server.
But remember, the funniest thing Trump ever did was he said, hey, Russia, can you tell us what was on that email server? Which they got so fucking mad about that, dude. That's like one of the reasons I voted for Trump was that kind of commentary, which is I think why other people did it too. I mean, the only time in my life I've ever cast a ballot in the United States, and it was for Donald Trump in 2016.
But he had like what, hard copy in the bathroom? Like it was just like boxes of documents like in his bathroom, something like that?
I don't know if it was in a bathroom. Maybe it was in a bathroom. It might have been in a bathroom. But they have pictures now that you can see of the boxes of documents in a room in Mar-a-Lago. And there's a bunch of – I haven't followed the intrigue very closely because I'm not that interested, but – they had some attorney.
Yeah, it's a Mar-a-Lago bathroom with a chandelier in it.
Of course, yeah. There's like probably some big like hot
got
tub.
A chandelier. Why do you need a chandelier in your fucking bathroom?
Because you're Donald Trump.
It's not necessary.
He's got chandeliers everywhere. And presumably, there's like some big hot tub in there too. Like some big bath, like an extravagant bathtub in there probably.
All right. It looks like there's a variety of rooms, but that included the bathroom. There's just like boxes and boxes just piled up around the shower. Right.
And so you wonder, and you wonder, like,
does this nigga not have a basement?
Well,
you don't have like a storage room.
The reason why that's the case is he was legitimately hiding them, because they got one of his attorneys to flip, and there was a point where one of his attorneys had been, I was reading about this a little while ago, had been notified of the issue, and was gonna like comply with orders from the government to turn the documents over. And when he showed up at Mar-a-Lago, he was told the documents were in to do the search. This is what he says. Now, he seems to have been sort of conspiring in this, but he's turned on Trump now, like everyone does. He shows up, and he's told, oh, those are in, like, the warehouse. So he goes to the warehouse, and there were documents there, and he went through them, and they was like, there's nothing really here. Meanwhile, the actual documents of concern were in the bathroom.
Hanging out in the bathroom, yeah.
You're going to find me boxed up in a bathroom. So that's where they were. I mean, like, it's funny because... And so at first I was like, this... When I first heard about this story, I was like, this is a stupid... This is just dumb partisanship. This is them going after Trump on anything they can get him on, which that absolutely was the case with like the Stormy Daniels, like giving her money for a tit job or whatever it was that he did. Like no one cared about that. That was an attempt. That was you can kind of see the fingerprints of different groups. Like that was an actual like Democrat Party thing. And you can tell because it's a less sophisticated type of attack. Like, basically, like, okay, Trump has a lot of these right-wing Christian or right-wing cultural conservative supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Let's expose him for paying a hooker for a boob job in exchange for a blow job or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And let's assume that this is going to outrage these people. And it just didn't, right? It was a fail. And I could have predicted that nobody would have really given a shit about that. Nobody really, in their core being, is offended by the idea of a rich or a powerful man getting a blowjob from a hooker. That doesn't offend people.
Yeah, yeah, but it'd be like he was never a Christian candidate to begin with.
Right, and generally speaking, it's inoffensive to people. For like, no one cared that JFK did it. No one cared that Bill Clinton did it. People just made fun of Bill Clinton for the caliber of...
For years and years, just the same joke over and over.
Yeah, but also just like the caliber of woman, like he was kind of like bottom of the barrel, where you got JFK's got like Marilyn Monroe. Donald Trump has like Stormy Daniels. Like they've got like these supermodel porn stars, and Bill Clinton has this chubby Jewish chick. So it's like, all right, you know. But hey, look, maybe that's what he's into. Like, I'm not going to judge the man's taste. You know, that might just be to him what he thinks is very attractive. But yeah, the president gets
she's
side
one
pussy.
Of those big face Jews. I didn't notice that until just now. Yeah, she's got that big face.
She is not attractive.
But it's like, what is another fucking Jew? Naomi Wolf or somebody like that? I get my Naomi's confused. But the one with the big face.
Yes,
like,
Naomi Wolf is, I think, the one, the shock doctrine right? She's got a huge face.
Yeah.
It's like really big. But she's even more attractive than, at least she was in her prime. It's like all Yentas, she's like this, she's really fat now. She in her prime, she was more attractive than Monica Lewinsky was. Even her large face was not as like trollish as Lewinsky's face, but like it was still very large though, like huge head and face. But she went also off the COVID deep end. Like she was doing anti-vax shit.
She flipped on COVID. I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was like her thing.
I can't get a good picture on frame for me.
So, but I think it's interesting that, you know, after looking into this document indictment, because I was sort of like, all right, are they just going to surround this guy with indictments and charges to try and scuttle his run or whatever? But it looks like, you know, thinking about it, Stryker did, I didn't even know because he didn't say anything about this yesterday. And then the article came out last night and I read it this morning or came out this morning. He did some research, I guess, overnight and he found like, oh shit, like these documents, these are actually national security documents. Or, I mean, in America, national security means our plans to attack enemies of Israel. But, yes, and apparently there's some, one of the leaks that he was purported to have done. This is why talking to Jews.
Yeah, that's actually funny how you mentioned that. National security in the United States, like, takes on a different meaning. It's like, well, what would happen if this data was compromised? Oh, well, we might have trouble invading that country.
Right, right. Well, because if you think about it, it's like, is Syria a threat to American, even Iran, a threat to American national security? Iran, I could see a better argument for that, but Syria, no. Syria and Iraq, certainly, was zero threat to American national security. I mean, none, zero. And the whole that was just, everybody acknowledges that's a lie, except if, amazingly, no consequences ever flowed from that. And the same people that engaged in that lie are out there, like, attacking Donald Trump for telling lies. And it's like, it's absurd. But Syria is no threat. Iran isn't really a threat to America other than to, like, shipping lanes in the Gulf and things like that. They are a legitimate threat to that. And they've, as we talked about, they've been seizing oil tankers. And there hasn't been much response because the U.S. is bogged down in Ukraine. But in any case, the General Milley apparently had accused Trump of trying to start a war with Iran before the end of his term in 2021, and Milley had to talk him out of it. This is a claim that Milley made. However, Trump made the counterclaim that no, it was General Milley that wanted to start the war, and I had to talk him out of it. And this was these competing claims were made in an interview with a Jewish woman for a New Yorker article that was attacking Trump, that was lionizing Milley. This article came out at, you know, in 2021. It was this Jewish New Yorker reporter, and the article was attacking Trump for being like some kind of warmongering fanatic, and it was lionizing Milley, who's still the secretary, still the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And Trump, in order to prove his case, he showed leaked documents. He showed classified documents to this Jewish woman who's a reporter for the New Yorker. And guess what happens? She's now a witness against him. So it's...
Wasn't there a thing where there was like an interview and you could hear him like shuffling the classified documents?
Yeah, he apparently had it like in his pocket.
Like, you're the paper rustling?
Yeah, no.
I got it right here.
No, because, this is the claim that the Iran war plan was like, this is Stryker, the Iran war plan was so cherished by Trump that he allegedly kept it folded in his pocket.
This is such a boomerism.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, it's kind of funny.
I walk around with classified information, got it in my pocket here, just so I can win an argument if I ever get in one.
Yeah. So, yes, it's very... So this was Susan Glasser. Susan Glasser of the New Yorker wrote an article in 2021 talking about... where basically, it says, it's the article, July 15th, 2021, Susan Glasser, you're going to have a fucking war. Mark Milley's fight to stop Trump from striking Iran. And I'm just like, all right, I mean, maybe, but, you know, Trump's claim is the opposite. And, of course,
this,
now...
This feels like, hold me back.
Yeah, and now this Jewish woman is saying, no, it was actually, you know, now this Jewish woman is like a witness against Trump saying, like, yeah, and there's multiple recordings of him doing this. So it's not... It's not purely. This is the article on the NJP site.
I see the documents.
There's a bad. See, look at there's that like nice, nice. Look at the nice work. Like nice fixtures on the sink. Here,
oh, I want to A-log this so bad. It's like this is actually not that nice of a bathroom. It just has a chandelier and like some nice furnishings in it. Like the actual construction design of that bathroom is.
No, it's not actually all that impressive.
It's like what is this, like a mid 1970s like
is house this window up here,
South Florida or something. Yeah, like this fucking tiny little half window at the very top.
That might just be like a random guest bathroom.
Looks like my fucking basement. My basement literally has those same exact type of windows.
Just put like marble fixtures in there and it's like, yeah.
I should. And then just put all my classified documents down here.
Mm-hmm.
Just to have them surrounding me as I'm doing a show. Just bought a wall of fucking right. Classified national security documents all the way around.
So that's kind of interesting that, I mean, that seems to show some kind of intent to hide the documents, putting them in the bathroom, similar to the Clinton server in the bathroom. It is sort of funny. Like these things always end up.
They're always in the bathroom.
Always end up in the bathroom. Why?
Is there even good out? Like, so here's my question about the server, right? The bathroom has GFCIs. Wouldn't it be possible that that's not a good place to plug in your server? And servers are kind of power hungry, right? Like, wouldn't you accidentally perhaps trip a GFCI?
That's a very good point.
Yeah,
if you take a long shower one day, you splash some water over the side of the tub, GFCI trips, and boom. Yeah. That's a very good point.
I want to talk to Hillary Clinton about that.
Yeah, like, did you think, unless she just was like, fuck it, just put a regular outlet in the bathroom. But then you have then you run the risk of shorting out the whole system.
Yeah, but yeah, now you're in violation of the electrical code. Nobody Oof. Wants to be in violation of the fucking residential
now, wiring. And if you thought Trump was going to go trouble. After you. If you thought Trump was going to go after you for the server, wait till he went after you for having a non-GFCI in a bathroom. Forget about it.
Oh, man.
So, this is the Free Fag Hour. If you would like to hear the second hour, sign up for the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know. Now, it says this. According to the indictment, Trump was recorded repeatedly declaring that he was breaking the law. As he showed his personal biographer, Mark Meadows, along with New Yorker journalist, sensitive documents detailing a secret Pentagon plan to attack Iran. Federal prosecutors also allege that they have hard evidence of Trump conspiring with his lawyer, Evan Krikorian. That's the guy who... was supposed to go and get the documents out of Mar-a-Lago and send them back to the White House or whatever, and co-defendant Walter Nauta to deceive federal investigators and destroy pertinent evidence. So Evan Krikorian, in an attempt to get out of this charge, claimed that he was in turn being deceived. Now, if you read the indictment, which I was looking at it, it doesn't mention anything about any specifics, but that doesn't stop... hasn't stopped analysts from saying, yeah, this is likely having to do with Iran, Hezbollah, and Syria. And of course, this New Yorker journalist and others have alleged that, yes, he was literally shuffling papers and unfolding the secret war plan with Iran. Now, that's to people who aren't as attuned to what's actually going on in America and the actual politics of America, it might seem not as eye-opening that that's specifically what Donald Trump was hiding. However, for those of us who understand the Jewish issue, that understand that Jews are in control of our country, and then understand that Israel specifically is in control of Donald Trump, or at least a certain faction of the Israeli government, is essentially Donald Trump can be considered an agent for them. It shouldn't surprise that then he is essentially taking U.S. documents, intelligence documents on this, or war plans on this, and just giving them to the Israelis. I mean, that seems to be the obvious play here. Now, what Stryker has theorized three, I got to give him credit, I wouldn't have thought of all of this, three possibilities. He's saying Trump, why Trump would want to take home so many documents detailing the military capabilities of Iran and its allies in the region without using his power to declassify them is up for speculation. One possibility, these are requested of him by his extensive Israeli contacts who wish to possess the information without it being declassified. The second option is he independently took the documents in hopes of having something to barter with Jewish donors in exchange for support for 2024. And another possible scenario is that the controversial decision to punish Trump was made by the Israelis, who feared that extensive operations with Washington against Iran would be accidentally exposed because of the former president's notoriously loose lips. So there's three possibilities here. I actually tend to think that it is likely that he did it on behalf of Israel, that Israel wanted it, he did it on behalf of them, and he got caught, and possibly they stabbed him in the back. So Israel gets kind of the best of both worlds. Like, they get the documents, they get access to them, and they get Trump out of the way.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, well, I got to put myself in the shoes of being like this narcissistic boomer. Like, what makes the most sense? Like, given that perspective,
mm-hmm.
Which one of these options makes the most sense? And I'm not sure.
Well, from the perspective of Trump being a narcissistic boomer, what makes the most sense is that he took them in order to try and get the Jews to support him for 2024.
Yeah, that's what I would kind of lean towards a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, these are just what he came up with while writing this article yesterday. There could be an infinite other number of possibilities. We'll never really know. But given Trump, and given the stuff he said about Israel, I'm the king of Israel. They love me in Israel. And then he's saying stuff like, you know, these Jews in America, they don't seem to like Israel very much. Like, why don't they love Israel as much as I do? And sort of doing that bit, which you sometimes, boomers will fall into this sometimes. You'll see, like, right-wing boomers that like, love Israel, but don't understand why, like, Jews in America at least don't wear the Israeli flag on their sleeve the way, like, some dumb boomer would. And they actually don't understand why would a Jew, like, take the side of a Muslim in some dispute when, you know, Muslims don't like it. It's a very simple-minded approach. So it's like, you don't understand all the complexities here, what these Jews do. It's like, never assume that you know better than a Jew what's good for a Jew. That's just one of my rules of thumb. Because every time you do that, what's going to happen is Jews are going to pull strings and they'll probably get you indicted. Right? Like,
yeah, well, I think more broadly, though, with Trump, it's like, you can tell that this guy was not embedded into the system the way he was supposed to, even though he may have done everything they wanted him to do ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's kind of like the new guy at work or something. Nobody really trusts him.
Yeah. Right. Right. And even when he's doing like a good job, you're like, that just makes you more angry. You're like, he's not one of us.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
And here he is. He's reporting early. He's like the kid that the teacher forgets to collect the homework and he raises his hand. By the way,
all right.
I did the homework, and you're like, fuck, shut the fuck up. Yeah. Man, that happened to me one time. It was a Jewish kid that did it. It was in my AP art history class, where at the beginning of the year, the teacher, it was senior year of high school, the teacher assigned a years-long research project that we would have to have by the end of the fourth quarter. And it would be the main part of our fourth quarter grade. In fact, it would be our entire fourth quarter grade would be our research project. And it was an independent project. He gave certain parameters for it. And literally nobody did it. And in fact, I was like kind of the ringleader of the let's not do it. And there was even a couple of girls, because the class was mostly girls, only a few guys in the class. Mostly girls, so I could easily convince them, you know, I could easily, like, use mind control tactics on them. This one girl was very hesitant, and the other ones were giggling at like how bad it was to like just like not do the thing. And the guy was black, teacher was black, so he forgot everything. He was also taking methadone because he had been a heroin addict, so he would like fall asleep in class and start drooling on himself, and he put on films. Wow. Yeah, it was kind of a tragic situation. But anyway,
did you just tell him like, look, man, I got the homework. It's in the bathroom.
I have a huge box of research documents. Actually, my homework was to develop a secret plan for the Israelis to attack Iran. That was my art history research project. It's sort of a performance art thing. It's kind of very avant-garde new art movement that's up and rising. It's called Zionism, and it's like a new performance.
I can't give you the homework because it's not declassified yet. It's kind of a catch-22 situation.
Right, and that's part of the whole art project. That's part of the avant-garde nature of this art project. There's an up-and-coming new artist in this scene. His name is Volodymyr Zelensky. He's a performance artist in this genre. He does a lot of performance art. He wears like a olive drab suit when he goes to international meetings. He tries to look like he's a military fighter. He's really just kind of a low-tier Jewish comedian, but you know, it's sort of a very interesting performance art project that he's engaged in here when he goes to the international meetings wearing sweatpants. It's kind of a big thing he's doing, but but yeah. So anyway, at the very end, this one Jewish kid who was kind of a nerd and wasn't in any he's like I've done the research project, and we were like,
but why?
As it turned out, though,
you didn't have to post that.
Yeah, you didn't have to. As it turned out, though, I don't remember exactly how that turned out. I remember I think he ended up not bothering to grade it, like just saying okay, whatever, because no one else did it. So
yeah,
in the end, it didn't matter to me because I didn't go to college anyway. I skipped a semester before I actually went to college, and I don't know, somehow that made everything matter less, and then I left college after a year and a half. But anyway.
Is that when Kanye West dropped the college dropout, and you're like, yeah, I should do that, I should just drop out?
I had never heard of Kanye West.
Thanks, Kanye.
No, I'm actually a very old fag, so I was in college, I think, before Kanye West even came on the scene, at least as far as I know. When did that come out?
2001-ish, 2003?
Yeah, I had already dropped out of college. I was early. In fact, I was the one he was talking about in that. But yeah, no, I had already dropped out of college before that.
Shit, it was later than I thought. It was 2004.
Yeah. Oh. I never would have been a Kanye West fan anyway, though, because I never liked his music. Even though I did listen to some rap music, I never liked that. But
yeah, anyway. I think embarrassingly at the time, I was more into 50 Cent, and they had a big beef, because 50 Cent was like the ghetto, like...
Well, gangsta we were talking rap. About this yesterday, actually, these rappers, like, and it's very funny how the idea of the diss track is still very much present, not just in rap, but in everything now. So, like, 50 Cent made himself big by just dissing everybody. His first big hit, I remember it, was just a diss on every big rapper. And so everyone was, like, listening to the track because he dissed, like, literally every single big rapper.
He figured out the power of being an A-log.
Right. Yes. A-logging gets you places. And then I think another rapper like Cam'ron started like A-logging him, and he was ignoring it for a while, and then he had to pay attention to it, and et cetera, et cetera. And the reason Stryker and I were talking about this is because this seems to be Matthew Cockrell's plan, is to just do diss tracks on me until I have to pay him attention. Because he's doing so many. But, you know, I'm going to try my best to not get baited into that. It was very difficult.
You got to be careful, too. If you try that strategy, if you're trying to diss people and A-log them constantly, and then they finally give you attention, it is a good way to get blown the fuck out.
Well, that's what's going to happen here. So, and I'm just highly suspicious of what's going on.
And this has happened in rap history, too. Yeah. This is the kind of thing that's played out. Sometimes literally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sometimes it looks like literally. Yeah, I'm highly suspicious of what this guy is doing. I mean, he's obviously got some very low-tier Jews, like, egging him on and fanning his nuts, and they might not be aware. Well,
it's also like, dude, do you not understand how YouTube algorithms work? Like, your shit is so deranked.
Right, because you're talking about things you're not supposed to talk about.
Yeah, you're never going to change that.
Oh, yeah. And he was trying to police the kinds of things I would say during the debate so his video wouldn't get banned. And I'm like, I don't give a shit if your video gets banned, bro. My videos are all banned from YouTube. I don't care if yours are. And nice try, again, trying to police the kinds of arguments I can make in the debate. Another classic example. Don't talk about the Jewish. How am I supposed to not talk about that in this debate? Yeah. Get out of here. I don't give a shit if your video gets banned from YouTube. It's not my problem. Your account might as well be banned, though. Like, what's the difference between your account and an account that's banned? The only difference is that there are videos present on YouTube under your account, but view counts are basically the same. This is the Free Fag Hour. If you would like to hear the second hour, sign up for the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall. Thank you. Like, your view counts on YouTube and mine are identical.
Right.
It's like zero. So, whatever, you know? In fact, I will bet you that whatever stray videos, TDS videos, are still lurking someplace on YouTube are getting more videos than yours. More views than yours. Anyway, I don't know. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
Documents, something I didn't know. I wasn't paying any attention to it because I haven't been paying much attention to Trump. And one thing I've noticed is it does seem to be Trump fatigue seems to be setting in. There seemed to be where was he indicted yesterday? Was it in Florida? I think it was in Florida. They took him to a courthouse. Was it in Jacksonville? Where was it?
Yeah, I saw like a photo floating around. Or not. It was like an artist rendition or something.
Well, one thing, the Guardian, this is also the weakness of libtard reporting on this thing. Libtards are such horrible A-logs that their reporting on these topics is so, it's so one-sided and so, like, obviously bad.
What am I fucking looking at right here with the coverage? It's like The Wrap has this article. Tucker Carlson pinpoints the precise moment Donald Trump doomed himself to arrest. He sealed his fate. And they follow this up by saying, Tucker Carlson now operating in open defiance of a cease and desist letter from Fox News.
Yeah, so apparently that's another thing we can get into. So
it's like, what?
Trump was indicted in Miami. And The Guardian, I guess that's the closest city to Mar-a-Lago. The Guardian had an article yesterday where they were complaining that the rules for no cameras in the courtroom meant that the public had to rely only on an artist's sketch to see Trump at bay. This is how they put it. So their whole thing,
like he's a rabid dog,
was desiring to see Trump be like humbled by a judge or something like that. And I'm like, first of all, based on the first indictment in New York City, I don't think that actually happened because Trump doesn't do that, right? Like, his personal demeanor is not such that he, no matter what, who else is in the room with him, he's the one everyone's looking at. He's the one everyone's paying attention to. And his demeanor never seems to go to the at bay posture. It seems, and he's never really on the defensive. Even as a judge is berating him, somehow he'll come out, and this is just pure power personality, he'll come out looking like the one who's not an asshole in the situation, and it's something that eternally frustrates libtards. And one of the reasons why one of the things they want more than anything is an image of him handcuffed or an image of him, a mugshot of him or something like that. And I don't think they're going to get it. They're very angry that the previous indictment never led to some kind of arrest. I think they're angry that this one isn't leading to it. And there's some motivation on that front for they ultimately really want that. But this seems to be a more actual serious thing. It's sort of interesting.
Okay, so Carlson's narrative is that Trump basically sunk his battleship whenever he stated things about the Iraq war, that we should never have been in Iraq, we destabilized the Middle East, etc. That's what Carlson is claiming. Is that was the moment when Washington, D.C. decided they were going to get this guy.
That's maybe true, maybe not. Probably not entirely true. But it's a good narrative to go with if you want to kind of go after the deep state or whatever, right? If you want to do that. But did Trump ever really say that? I mean, I guess
supposedly, yeah, supposedly said that, but it was so everybody forgot about it because it was like before the 2016 election, like 9 months before 2016.
Well, he was also saying he was also very much and famously against intervention in Syria on his social media accounts. You know, very early on, and this was and this is probably before he was fully, you know. I don't know. Maybe this.
I think I disagree with Carlson's narrative that it, what he was doing was implicating too many people, and they were all guilty, and now they're in trouble. Like, no, they don't care.
They don't give a shit about that.
However,
no,
what they really cared about, they may have not liked the idea that you're going to take right wing Americans and make them anti-war. That may have, like, publicly anti-war, like making that your a plank of your like persona.
Oh, they hated that. That's absolutely correct. They hated that. I mean, the reason they don't like Trump isn't. Actually, anything he really, I mean, isn't really him because he didn't do anything. But they don't like that the tactics that he used to get elected. And this is the nature of the dispute between the I don't know, we say the optics kikes versus Jignat, whatever you want to call it. This is the nature of this sort of loose dispute between these two loose collections of Jews. With the idea that this is not a strict right-left divide, there are so-called right-wing Jews on the optics kike side. Like, most of the neocons are on that side, actually. Most of the neocons actually are happy to dispense with Trump. And the reason is because neocons, despite seeming to fall under the aegis of, like, right-wing Jewry in America, are very much aligned with liberal Jewry in terms of their international viewpoints and aspirations. And that go beyond sometimes what they see as a very narrow security interests of Israel alone. They see that, look, there's a broader issue here. The American empire has to stay in power and has to be able to hobble all of these different countries in order for Israel to ultimately be saved. We can't necessarily worry just only about this little zone around Israel in the Middle East. But America... And also, there's been a lot of talk about America is going to be, like, chased out of the Middle East and such. It's true we have fewer assets in the Middle East than we've had in a while, but I don't think that – I think that will be the last place they'll chase us out of if we get chased out. But that will be the last
place. I thought the rumors of our withdrawal from the Middle East really greatly exaggerated.
Well, there's fewer assets in the Middle East than there were, like, 30 years ago. That's true. But and certainly fewer assets in Iraq, like, but and that's been a big problem because the Iraqis don't want us there. They don't. I mean, this is the problem. They kind of became victims to their own narrative there. But ultimately what they do is they basically just ignore what the Iraqis want. They just don't listen to them. And there's fewer assets in Syria. I mean, unless we're just being lied to, you know, there's only a few thousand troops in Syria, and they're not supposed to be there. There's two places where they are. Mainly the place where America is in Syria is this desert region in eastern Syria that borders Iraq that's basically total desert. There's, like, one village there, and there's, like, military bases there. The main conflict zones actually are not – are in western – northwestern Syria.
Yeah,
northern
given
–
Given
and we're not there.
Of the United States and who is effectively in control of it, I feel like that's going to be the last region that the military-industrial complex ever pulls out of. It'll be like...
Yeah, and look, you would think...
Get this gun out of my cold, dead fingers.
Long ago, you would think that they would want to leave Syria. Like, it's a failed operation. They haven't taken out Assad. Assad is not going anywhere. But they just maintain the country on a destabilized posture because that means that even though Assad's not going anywhere... That he can't actually reconsolidate power, rebuild his military, and be a yet another looming threat on the border with Israel. Because Syria was always one of the most serious military threats to Israel, and it maintained a pretty strong aggressive stance towards it. No treaties, no nothing. Like, they weren't dealing with the Jews. They, you know, they were always pretty oppositional, and this is what happens. You know, unlike the Egyptians who cucked out, the Jordanians who cucked out, and of course, other countries that say Libya, you know, Gaddafi always stayed totally oppositional to the Jews and they killed him. And he saw it was funny is he saw it coming he saw it coming that he was going to get killed. And in 2010, he actually started to make appeals to Jewish groups in America to basically not kill him. And they're like, no. Once you do that, now we know you're on the ropes. Now we know you're done. So yeah, I don't know. The thing is, it seems like if Jews have to retrench, like, they definitely are still worried about Europe. They're very worried about Europe. They don't want the white race ever being independent anywhere. It's most important for Jews to maintain dominance over white countries and then maintain an aggressive military posture in the Middle East. They seem to be their main goals. But, like, having white countries, and this is, you know, having white countries become independent of Jewish rule is just a nightmare for them. That's the absolute, for them, the nightmare scenario. That's why, you know, they're attempting to replicate the American demographic situation in Europe. And it's a mess. I mean, they are now welcoming 1.1 million immigrants. They say welcoming. This year alone, there's 1.1 million non-white immigrants expected in Germany, 600,000 expected in Britain. And those seem like rookie numbers for America, but these countries are smaller. Britain is one-fifth the size, and Germany is about one-fourth the size of America. So these would be equivalent.
It's also denser. It's also much denser. Everybody is on top of each other. Everybody is
a
little bit more localized. They have a bit more of a community in the United States, so that's something patriotic alternative I know is used to their advantage.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, that's why Jews are sort of fast-tracking this, because they're like, look, Jewish racial theories and Jewish racial narratives are going to be more easily. I mean, if you can force these countries to be 60% white or 60% native German, then they can go out there and make the argument, well, some kind of German nativist movement just doesn't make any sense. The same way they say that to a white nationalist in America, like, white nationalism just doesn't make any sense. Look at the actual situation in America. You'll never win. Like, that argument will start to become, you know, that wouldn't have been a valid argument in Germany like 5 years ago. But they want to eventually, and in England, you know, people will make that argument, although it's increasingly plausible as the country becomes less white. So Jews are like, let's hurry up and get these countries to a place where they're only 60% white or 60% English, 60% German. And then these racial arguments just, they'll be overwhelmed by the situation. And people will start being like, well, we have to be civic nationalists. We have to incorporate everybody in and blah, blah, blah. And one thing's for sure, the claim that these migrants are needed for some kind of economic development is totally not true. The migrants are economic burdens on the countries in which they bring them into.
Yeah, which people are taking advantage of that talking point. I've seen that. Well, you know, like, well, we can't afford houses. Why are you bringing in migrants?
Yes.
We don't have a place to live.
And they don't have an answer for that. Which is why they have to just ban patriotic alternative.
I've seen, like, policy discussions about this topic in the context of it being, like, an economic thing, and the balancing point they always talk about, well, if you bring in too much immigration, too many migrants at once, it's politically destabilizing, it leads to domestic unrest, so you've got to be very careful about that kind of thing. And now you're seeing the pushback.
Yes.
I think potentially in Europe they have probably bitten off more than they could chew.
It's
a bigger, wider country, people are more spread out, and you kind of get away with doing mass immigration.
People are more just beaten down in America. It's a more atomized country. I mean, America's already collapsed socially. America is a collapsed country. And this situation in America is what Jews are trying to replicate in Europe. The social breakdown of America, the racial incoherence of it, the complete lack of any kind of community.
I mean, I don't think most Americans even know their neighbors.
No.
Probably most Americans have no idea the last name of the family that lives near them.
No.
So you kind of get away with.
When I grew up, we knew the last name of almost every house on our street. There's only a few where I didn't know the people that lived in the house, at least knew their name. Some of them we knew, some of them we didn't like. Or didn't like us. So a lot of them were crotchety old people, but we knew who they were. I knew the last name of every house adjacent to mine across the street. On either side, we knew the name of all those families. And even going down the street, going further down the whole block, we knew the name of ultimately most of the families. lived in those houses. There was only a few we didn't know, and that was just, I don't know, just didn't know who lived there. My dad probably did. I didn't, though. I only knew some of them. And if they had kids, then I definitely knew them. But yeah.
Yeah, Pew Research says 57% of Americans say they only know some or none of their neighbors. Share climbs up to 72% among 30 to 49-year-olds. 78% among 18 to 29-year-olds. So the younger generation, most of them have fucking no idea about their neighbors.
That's crazy, none. Because it used to be, when I was a kid, the way you around, knew neighbors right? was yep. families that had kids.
Yep.
Kids knew each other. Kids would go meet each other at school or going out to play, and therefore then the other families would meet each other. That was the main reason the parents knew each other. It's because their kids knew each other.
Yep, that's how I knew my neighbors.
That seems to be changing. That seems to be not the case anymore.
Yeah, now that I think about it, yeah, literally, I knew all of the neighbors within me, like their names and stuff, probably for about at least a 1 mile radius, maybe two. Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, the only families we didn't really know in the street I was growing up on would be these old people that became that like either they had kids, their kids were long since moved away and grown up and long gone, and they were just old, just like old people aging in their homes and go out much. Therefore, we had no contact with them. But even some of those we knew. Like I would do, my dad always broke my balls to do like stuff with the church. And doing stuff with the church, we would go out and bring stuff to old people and things like that. You know, you go to their house, bring them a Christmas tree at Christmas and set it up for them because they're too old to do that. That kind of stuff, right? And my dad always made me do that stuff. And it was good that he made me do that because it made me less of a piece of shit. But I don't know right. of anybody, anybody, really, that's very, I mean, I'm old. I'm old fag. I'm going to be 50 years old in 4 years. I mean, that's scary to think about. I don't know if you ever think of me as actually being that old. We've known each other for almost 15 years now, it seems. 12 years. But definitely 12 years, at least, if not 13. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Now I feel extremely old. Think about it.
We've known each other online for 13 years. Since 2010 at least. Man. So yeah, there's that. Okay.
I remember when you were in like your mid-30s and it was like, he's a little bit older than me.
That's when we started.
Yeah.
Yes, I was a few years older than you.
Yeah. And now mid-30s feels young to me.
Like, oh, my God. I would kill to be mid-30s. No, I'm 46 years old. And so I'm an old fag, and it's true. And people make fun of me about it, and they're not wrong. It's fine. I'm an old fag. That's okay. But, yeah, dude, like, I came from a time when you would do things like you'd go to church, and if there was old people that couldn't really leave their houses, you'd, like, bring them a Christmas tree at Christmas, and you'd set it up for them. As like a nice thing to do. Like that's the time I come from. That still existed when I was a child. I don't think shit like that goes on anymore in this country.
Not really.
I don't think it does.
I don't think it does. And I live in a rural area and I don't really know my neighbors very well. I don't know. This complete dissolution of community is a big issue with Americans.
Right.
And it's probably a big issue in the Western world, but America particularly. And it makes it harder to push back against things whenever you don't have.
I mean, this is the Jewish plot. I mean, this is the ultimate Jewish plot. Now you could say like, oh, you can't totally blame them. Maybe so, but they're the ones in charge. The social system that they have pioneered has been in power since the end of the war. The war fought on their behalf, and the thing that they encourage in all their propaganda and in all their political policies, the kind of lifestyles, the kinds of political policies, the kinds of media. Everything that they built, this is the result. So, like, if you can't blame them, who can you blame? Certainly saying white people are by nature to blame doesn't make any sense because this is not something that white people have always organically created when they've created communities, no matter what ethnicity or nationality they were. Organically, the kind of thing we have in America didn't exist until this top-down social thing was imposed on us. Despite all the bad influences of America, Americans formed organic communities until the top-down influences of the media and the political structures made it virtually impossible to do so. And so, and not to mention the economy and the economic pressures. I mean, there's this new, have you read this thing about there's this new economic class that this one guy, Borzoi, was posting about this the other day. This economist has invented this word precariat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not new.
Oh, it's not new. Okay.
At least it's not new to me. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was new to me, but I mean, it's a clumsy word, but the concept, as soon as you hear it, you know what it is. You're talking about like gig work.
It's from that book that he's. We both have the same book we've been reading. Yeah. That's why he brought it up.
Yeah. So he's talking about now the precariat are basically he's talking about gig workers, people that do Uber Eats or they'll drive, you know, and this is portrayed by the media as some great workers' liberation movement. Oh, look, you can work on your own time. You don't have a boss. You don't have this and that. But problem is people that do this, they've studied this, people that do this gig work have no social capital. They are less likely than anybody else to do things like go. I mean, forget about going to see the opera. I mean, it was amazing to me that this was one of the criteria, right? Because if you don't live near a city, you're not going to be able to go see the opera no matter what. But they don't even do things like go to the movies. They don't even do things like go to the gym. Like they have no, they don't go to church. They don't go to the gym. They don't go to the movies. They don't see their neighbors. They don't see their friends. They are basically people that do gig work and go home and watch TV or watch streaming or whatever, right? That's what the precariat do. They are less likely to have relationships, have children, have friends, engage in any kind of social activities. I mean, these are people that are lost. And this system is celebrating the creation of this class. And if not for the work of some academics...
That's like the fungible worker class. They're just literally just worker units, like little worker drones. Yeah,
right.
The pattern seems to be, if you're an American, what you do, even a rural area, is you scurry off to work in your motor vehicle. You drive sometimes multiple hours a day to get to your job. You come home, you scurry inside, you put on the TV, and you don't do any further interaction. I think some of it is you're just kind of drained and exhausted.
Fucking tired.
Like, I don't want to deal with people. Mm-hmm. I want to curl up into my little shell over here and not poke my head out. And this seems to become self-reinforcing. It's like a self-reinforcing pattern. Before you know it, you don't even know anybody around you. You don't know your neighbors. And you have almost no social interaction. And it becomes like a feedback loop.
Right. And that's the ultimate... I mean, that's where we're headed. I mean, that's where we are in many places. And, of course, things like immigration... And then all of the various other social inputs are leading to this. I mean, they're perpetuating this very badly. And it becomes impossible and it becomes even harder to know your neighbors when they're from different countries, different races, speaking different languages, which is not always the case everywhere. Oftentimes it's people that aren't like
and
that.
It becomes like a multi-generational self-reinforcing loop because if you live that way, you're not going to know your neighbors or anything around you, and it's going to make you very fearful of letting your kids go outside and do things and explore the neighborhood, things like that. Because, I don't know who could be out there.
Well, that's the thing. Even like middle-class people that have children, I mean, there's been studies talking about how the way they circumscribe what their children are allowed to do. And I've seen studies of this. In England, they study this more because they more recently still had a country and a community. I mean, America's been on this path longer. Britain, they can trace it to much more recent memory where they still had communities. And where kids, probably even into like the 90s, maybe even the early 2000s, there were neighborhoods in Britain where children could just go outside and do whatever. Like when I was a kid, there really wasn't much of this... You know, you can't, like, even when I was, like, 8, 9, you know, we could just go outside, and there was a brook out behind our house, and we would always go down in there and be playing around in there, and whoever would come, whatever kids were relatively in the area would usually on Saturdays be out there, not every time, sometimes you get a different mix, but, you know, you'd always know, like, okay, these kids are going to come. And we didn't really have to make plans. Sometimes I'd call some of my friends and be like, we should go to the brook or we should go to the schoolyard or whatever. And my parents would be, as long as I would tell them, like, yeah, we're going over. The school is a few blocks away. You know, it was just very simple. And even if I was going to some friends that lived several blocks away, I could still walk up there and kids would be playing like street hockey or whatever they'd be doing or basketball or whatever. And it would just be whatever. My parents never really gave a shit. They trusted me to like walk anywhere I could in the town. Now, granted, it was a nice town. Not very much bad was going on. It was entirely white when I was a kid. Entirely white town. Everybody was white. I mean, if you saw black people, it was very rare. Very rare to see them. Now, you would see them at school, and you'd see them when you got nearer to the border with Newark. But, you know, everybody was basically white.
Yeah, and that's how I was raised. So we would disappear for hours in the woods. We'd hang out with other neighborhood kids. We would literally be gone for hours. And, you know, the scary thing is, like, when you're a kid, because there's actually a social network your parents are plugged into, is whenever they call around looking for you.
Yes.
And somebody's parent is like, you know, your mom's looking for you. Oh, shit.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, fuck, I'm in trouble now.
Yeah, yeah. Because, yeah, the parents, yeah, that all that shit. There's all, and all that shit was, that all just was emergent. Like, that stuff just happened. And now, it's sort of funny, like, how did that just, like, stop happening? And where I come from, I think it had to be a combination of, because the town I grew up in now is not. This is the Free Fag Hour. If you would like to hear the second hour, sign up for the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall. Thank you. White anymore. Like, there's all kinds of races there. And also, frankly, just increasing time of kids spent in front of phones and screens and apps and shit like that. That can't be discounted as part of it. Because we didn't really have, I mean, we had TV, but it wasn't so great that it was better than going outside and hanging out with your friends, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't really so great. Now, I'm sure that maybe that's different in some places, but now it's, and we play video games too. Like, that was a thing. Like, we had Sega Genesis and Nintendo and all that shit. We play that, you know, you'd have friends over and play video games and shit, but I don't know. It was like a strictly, like, no adults, when I was, like, the idea of an adult playing a video game when I was a kid was, like, unfucking heard of. Unheard of. I remember one time my dad was playing Pac-Man on the Atari 2600 that we got when I was very, very young. He was playing Pac-Man. And he would play Frogger sometimes. And that was it.
My dad played video games. It was more of a different situation, though. Like, socially, it was different because, like, whoever was playing would have, like, an audience.
Yes.
Like if you play like Doom and be like watching play Doom, and then some of us would take over or whatever.
Now people just do that online. They just watch people stream. So my dad was like streaming himself playing Frogger to the rest of the family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like streaming to his kids. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to stream to your children.
Yeah. Right.
You don't want to watch somebody else's dad play a video game. That's weird. That's fucking weird.
Yeah, that would be weird to watch someone else's dad play. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, this is just, I mean, it's quite, but the thing is, I'll say this, just to plug our little thing, you know, we had the NJP thing on Saturday. It was in Ohio. It was not in East Palestine, but it was close. As usual, we were above capacity, and so many little kids were there. There's a lot of kids there, and not just little ones. There was teenagers, there was kids that are 8, 9, middle school, preschool kids, the whole gamut. We didn't have quite as many old people this time as we've had at sometimes we actually had grandparents. I didn't see quite as many older people, but I don't know where else you're gonna get something like that anymore. I just don't.
Yeah.
So now people have to actually, this the thing that sucks about America is people have to do work. You have to engage in the power process in order to have a community now. Which is, I would say, all right, fair enough. That's where we are. These things are no longer emergent. These things no longer just are available for you. And it's because of any number of different social inputs that have been created by the top-down Jewish system. The economic precarity, the social incoherence, the ever presence of all kinds of devices and media to distract people, all these things play a part. So now if you want to have a community, you have to engage in the power process. As our buddy Ted Kaye, rest in peace, would describe it.
You got to make friends with racists. Sorry.
Yeah, it's just how it's going to have to be. If you're going to be an anti-racist, you're just going to be. I mean, it is true. Like, this is just not going to go. Now, what's funny is people increasingly are engaging in, like, intentional communities. Like, even libtards do this. And libtards engage in intentional community building as well. But everybody has to do it in order to have one. Because, you know, when I was a kid, there would be sometimes a sort of a little rumor going around that maybe so-and-so might be a Republican. And certainly the older people were definitely Republicans or would vote Republican. And there was even a rumor, God forbid, that the guy who lived across the street from us actually had guns. My dad was actually upset when he found out about it, because there was a point where when I was a kid, I actually, when I was learning to drive, I took my parents' car out one night when I wasn't supposed to. And I fucked up. I actually I dented the front bumper because I hit an obstacle at the end of the driveway because I was an idiot, right? I was a 16-year-old moron. I'd been learning to drive, and so I just one night just took the car out to go riding around with my friends. And as I was backing out of the driveway, you know, I took the corner wrong, and because I was stupid. I was young, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I hit like an obstacle at the end of the driveway, and I dented the front fender. Now, this noise alerted the neighbor across the street, who then told my dad about it, and he said that he thought somebody was stealing our car, and he was liable to get his gun and shoot.
Oh, shit.
And that's when my dad was like, oh, my God, this guy actually has a gun. I didn't know that was allowed around here. And my dad even said to me, I was lucky. He was so mad about it.
I didn't think it was allowed. It's like, sir, this is America.
Well, it's New Jersey. That's not really America. But
I don't even know if New Jersey is part of Earth.
No, it's not. It doesn't really exist, actually. But, no, actually, surprisingly, like almost every state, you can get a rifle in New Jersey. Just nobody does. Except for this guy who is, I'm sure, this guy wasn't even a boomer. He was pre-boomer. I'm sure he's long dead. Rest in peace. But yeah, that was what he said to my dad. He's like, I thought somebody was stealing your car. I was gonna get my gun out and shoot him. But that didn't happen, thankfully. I didn't get shot by this guy. But it was also really dumb. And then after I did it, I was stupid. Like, I pulled the car back in and just went inside. I didn't know what I was going to do. And then the cops showed up. And they were like, what happened? I was like, nothing.
Yeah.
They're like, well, we already saw the car in the driveway. What did you do? And I was like, what do you think I did? What do you think I did? And then they knew exactly what had happened. And they were just told my parents, like, yeah, your son's a fucking moron. And, yeah, couldn't say they were wrong. Anyway.
I got sad news for TRS meme culture. It's a bit of an older meme involving Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp. But it's a sad day. It's a sad day.
What, is Shannon Sharp died?
No, but he's leaving.
Oh. Oh, he's man. Leaving. Skip. Yeah, this is all. We haven't done
this
in a while.
It's the end of an era.
Man, look at this. Look at this pimp-ass suit this nigger has.
I think he's going to actually tear up.
Yeah. This is the Free Fag Hour. If you would like to hear the second hour, sign up for the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall. Thank you. Wait, is this... this better not be muted.
That's muted.
Why is it? Okay, yeah. All right, here we go.
And last but not least, Skip Bayless.
Mm.
You fought for me, bro.
Did I?
I'm here because of you. You've allowed me to share the stage with you. You've allowed me to share the platform. I'm going to cry in the car, but I'm not going to cry now. The opportunity that you gave me to become what I became, I'm forever indebted to you. I'll never forget what you did for me. You've helped me grow more than you ever know.
Okay. This is not easy for me either. But
one more thing,
one more thing before you go, Skip.
Okay. One more thing. All I ask is when you lay your head on that pillow at night, you know, I gave you everything I had.
You did.
I gave you everything I had.
Which is why I want to thank you for all you have given to me. When I first took this...
This is getting very gay.
And last...
Actually, you know, we shouldn't engage in hermeneutics when two men are emotionally...
It's an emotional moment.
Emotionally bonding. That's not gay. That's not gay. Moment. Men used to actually have... You know, it's funny. A lot of this, speaking of this stuff about, you know, ancient Greeks weren't gay, or, you know, Leather Apron Club did a great video debunking this idea. Many people interpret what's being said as gay because you'll have things like these ancient Greek thinkers and philosophers saying, like, you know, men love between men and women is trivial. is purely a physical thing. The true bonding of a soul is between man and man. And everyone's like, oh, that's really fucking gay. It's like, no, these are just people who were saying that.
He just say something like that. Something like, men are capable of love, women are only capable of affection or something. Something to that effect.
And lust. But not just that. Yeah. I mean, that might be possibly not true because nobody, a man doesn't actually know what it's like to be a woman. There's many men trying to find out and they're doing a bad job of it. But,
yeah, that's how you get kicked out of the White House and you're never allowed to come back.
Well, no, it's how you get invited to the White House. You have to actually do something really stupid. But we'll get to that. But I understand why these people said that. And they're saying on the intellectual level, a man is only actually a peer for a man, right? You can't be, you know, this type of thing. So, and I get that that's what they were saying. Now, people may agree or disagree with that. You know, I'll sort of kind of pretty much agree with it. But without putting too fine a point on it, pretty much agree with that thing. But yeah, we got to stop with this hermeneutics of gay suspicion. It's too much. It's too much. This is Jewish. Jews have done this to us, and Jews even apply it retroactively to our ancient ancestors. And Leather Apron Club makes a point that, like, look, if gay was such an accepted thing, why then were they actually, when they would actually talk about homosexuality, so negative on it? It's sort of like the Holocaust. Like you have to interpret. Jews love doing this. You have to interpret through what they're saying that this thing happened. But when you look at what they actually say when addressing the topic, just like the Germans, you interpret through various statements. Maybe he could be hinting at the fact that there was a gas chamber program to exterminate Jews here. But when you actually just look at what they actually say about what their camps were for, they don't say, they say these are labor camps. We brought people in to do work, to build stuff, as you know, prisoners. We brought in dangerous segments of the population that were likely to rebel against us, and we put them to work building things for us for the war effort. That's basically what their documents say. And there's thousands of them. So it's the same thing with, like, oh, I'm looking at Plato's Symposium, and I'm seeing men talking about loving other men. They must be talking about gay sex. When you actually look at what the ancient Greeks said about homosexuals, they called them, like, gapers.
Is they the had rough all trends. Kinds of awful, disgusting terms for them, yeah, and this was not something you're proud of.
No, and in fact, the punishment was, as we said, state-mandated goatsy if you were caught doing this. So,
yeah. Really
so, yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah, well, I urge everyone to watch that video. So I saw some people try to refute that video. It seems like there were some neo-reactionary YouTubers. As we know, the neo-reactionary scene is sort of like very Jewish. They were very mad, not just about that, but about his claim that Jews are not actually any smarter than white people. This pissed off the NRX people so much because essentially the whole point of the neo-reactionary scene doing economic nationalism was sort of, or IQ nationalism rather, was to justify Jewish rule, knowing that they could fall back on these IQ studies. And this is an argument I used to have all the time with neo-reactionaries, or they would say, well, if we're talking about IQ, and yeah, clearly whites are smarter than blacks, but Jews are as much smarter than whites, and whites are smarter than blacks. Now, that's definitely not true. No matter what, even if Jews do have some slight advantage in this realm, it's certainly not nearly as wide as the gap between white and black. And so, yeah. So that's that whole project, and these neo-reactionaries were just so mad at Leather Apron Club for his videos. I saw these really nerdy accounts, really
going
after him.
He's not the only person who's going into it. I think Metatron also went into the whole thing about, yeah, about because I know they both of them covered the thing about, like, the pottery. Because there was some claim that, like,
yeah,
you always pitch the gay pottery, and then you actually look through, and even being generous, it's like, okay, there's only, like, 30 pieces of pottery that you might interpret as having some homosexual content out of thousands and thousands upon thousands of pieces.
Right, right. Yeah, he said he went through the study that claimed that it dates from the 1970s, much of this stuff. Some study of Greek pottery that was saying that there's homosexual depictions on this many. Now, the excuse would be then, well, sexual depictions are already relatively rare, which I guess would be true. But if you're going to select only those pieces of pottery that depict sex, and then you're going to say this one is... And he said even one that showed like heterosexual anal sex was actually, or what could be interpreted as heterosexual, was interpreted as a homosexual thing. So I'm just like, look, it looks like we're getting into territory where, you know, I don't need to like necessarily go further with this. I mean, you could interpret those hieroglyphs of black people washing Egyptian people's penises as some kind of homosexual thing when it's actually not. Just they're like anointing the penis, yeah. Like just what you do in Egypt. You're like, here, slave, come anoint my penis with oil. Like, thank you. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, we had something else. Oh, we're going to talk about the White House. We can just do that next hour.
Yeah, let's do that next hour.
It seems, though, I'll just say this, like, conservatives. Well, I'll save my narrative on this, although I did it yesterday. We did it yesterday on Striking Mike, too, my point about this. It sort of shows the futility of the conservative strategy to combat this menace. The trans menace, the whatever you want to call it, LGBTQ menace. Their entire strategy for fighting it is a fail. And this was basically proven yesterday. Thoroughly proven. But yeah, let me see. Do I have a trailer? It'll be a slightly shorter show because there's fewer of us, so there's less hours of talking that can be filled.
Well, that's fine because I did a whole bunch of time last night on MechWarrior.
There we go.
With DK.
Yeah. Okay,
NGR.
Good.
The Nigger podcast, I think.
Yes, Nigger.
Okay.
We call that podcast Nigger.
Nigger.
So yeah, Nigger. They did a Ukraine war map enjoying show like last week, but I'm saying like I don't know. I don't really need to listen to all that. I was just that Asian guy. That was all I needed to know. Like just checking in for my daily. Okay, who's winning today? Okay, got it. Got it. All right. Wait till next update. Watch Ukraine war map, enjoy your update. Get excited for next war map update. Anyway, all right. We'll see you guys next hour. This is the Free Fag Hour. If you would like to hear the second hour, sign up for the paywall at therightstuff.biz/paywall. Thank you.
You're listening to TDS on the Right Stuff.
Biz.